Significance, and we just really need to make sure that we do have the mind of the Lord, because that's the only thing that we really care about is serving Him. Mm-hmm. It has to do with the new nominee to the United States Supreme Court, which President Bush announced on Monday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And there has been a firestorm of activity since then. Her nomination has angered and disillusioned many conservatives, many Christian conservatives, many of my friends, many whom I love and have worked with for years, Gary Bauer, many others who see this issue differently than I do. And, you know, good people can draw different conclusions, mm-hmm. and you have to go on respecting each other and loving each other. But Paul and Barnabas disagreed. There are many disagreements in the Scripture between men of faith who were seeking the mind of God. Mm. And I think that may be what's going on here. And I don't mean any ill will to anyone. But I know that our listeners are confused and not sure about Harriet Myers and want to know why I have come out initially, at least, in favor of her nomination, and what I know that maybe they don't know. What's made this week so difficult is I started getting phone calls at 5:30 in the morning on Monday, mm-hmm. and it just hasn't stopped. I'm getting calls from members of Congress saying,
like it come from heaven, we would know that there was a God. But, now look at here, James Dobson. All this rhetoric talking about how your main thing in mind is to serve the Lord. Yeah, right. As you're serving up the masses of people on the platter for your whole version of Christianity and capitalism. And then you have the nerve to talk about how some of your Christian compatriots are angered and disillusioned. What the hell are you talking about? If you're a Christian conservative, you're automatically disillusioned from reality. And then you have the nerve also to talk about how, you know, many people in the Scripture, they can disagree. This, you know, they disagreed in the past. You can read it in the Scripture. Yeah, they disagree in the past, and when they aren't in your little Scriptures sodomizing each other, they're killing each other. That's one of the things we know is deep within your Scripture. Well, here's a Scripture of another sort. The Sounds of Freedom, Slave Time. Check it out. Mm-hmm. You're listening to 103.3, 104.1, Berkeley, 101.1, Wiskid, in Santa Cruz, 107.5, North Carolina, Upstart Radio, the Scooter. We got LUVER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe. Click into the slave web by going Slave Revolt Radio. Find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to shoot our way into Adventures in Corporate Media Land segment. As we're going to deal with, you guessed it, Bennett and Company. So we got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3. Slave Revolt. You know what time it is. Adventures in Corporate Media Land. And right on cue, after last week's Hurricane Sam 5 episode, the one that dealt with America, the genocidal impulse, Fat Man William Bennett exposes his racist genocidal impulse and ideology. We're going to explore this on this Ventures in Corporate Media Land segment, in a segment of racism, a question of power. And you'll see what I mean as we take it step by step, because it does come down in part to power. So, first off, let's hear a more complete clip of Bennett on his sloppy radio show in context of his black abortion statement.
I know the national media is, you know, they talk a lot about the loss of revenue or the inability of the government to fund Social Security. And I was curious, and I've read articles in recent months here that, you know, the abortions that have happened since Roe v. Wade, the lost revenue for the people who have been aborted during that the last 30-something years, you know, could fund Social Security as we know it today. And, what, you know, the media does never touch this at all.
Assuming they're all productive citizens?
Assuming that they are. Even if only a portion of them were, it would be an enormous amount of revenue.
Maybe, but we don't know what the cost would be, too. I think, is abortion disproportionately occur among single women?
I don't know the exact statistics, but quite a bit are, yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, I just don't know. I would not argue for the pro-life position based on this, because you don't know. I mean, it cuts both. You know, one of the arguments in this book, Freakonomics, that they make is that the declining crime rate, you know, they deal with this hypothesis, that one of the reasons crime is down is that abortion is up. Well,
I don't think that statistic is accurate.
Well, I don't think it is either. I don't think it is either because, first of all, I think there's just too much that you don't know. But I do know that it's true that if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do. But your crime rate would go down. So these far-reaching, you know, extensive extrapolations are, I think, tricky.
Okay, so there it was. And, what's in part kind of revealing about this is it's basically standard fare. Not only within the context of the American population in general, that as we've gone over in Hurricane Sam 5 and others, has this kind of genocidal impulse. We saw that with what took place in New Orleans over the Gretna Bridge, where people were trying to flee over the bridge into an area that was dry, had electricity, food, so on and so forth, were blocked by the police and had bullets shot over their head. They were forced back. And the mayor, the city council, the citizens in general, and this predominantly white enclave, all approved and applauded that. That's who set them out for. We've seen issues where the police in New Orleans had actually left a number of the inmates in the prison, and those who could get out without getting flooded out and drowned, that was fine, but those that couldn't, that was you. They didn't help them at all. Now, within that context, you have Bennett and others who come with these particular statements. And all the smoke and mirror that Bennett and others will try to juxtapose really crumbles when you break it down to what he was really saying. And what he was in essence doing, what he was juxtaposing was the advantage versus disadvantages with abortion. See, the caller called in, and his point was that there was an advantage in not having, there was a disadvantage in having abortions. And the disadvantage was that a large portion of the people were eliminated who would be living part of the workforce at a later stage and then help build the Social Security equity which Boy George is trying to pretend is in crisis, which we know is all a ruse. But what he's saying is that these people would be in the workforce, they would be contributing to the Social Security with their actual labor, and the Social Security situation would be in a much more economically sound situation. Bennett just opposed that and came with the disadvantage or the advantage of having the issue of abortion on the table. And for Bennett, the advantage in his juxtaposition of the disadvantage was that if you eliminated black people, aborted all black babies, that would be a reduction of crime. So Bennett was just opposing the guy's comment of there was a disadvantage in having abortion in America. Now, put this in mind. They're both conservative. The guy's calling in on a conservative show, and he's outlining kind of an argument on why there should not be abortion in America. And from his position, you have abortion in America, it takes out people in the workforce who would be helping build equity within the Social Security system. Bennett then challenges that, just opposes it. And he doesn't say the overall population or anything like that. He targets in on a specific group, black people. So Bennett himself says if you wanted to reduce crime, and that was your sole purpose, you can abort all black babies. That right there is the racist genocidal impulse in reaction, because what he was doing was linking race and crime with black people, which is part of this kind of psychopathic eugenics slash racist tradition. This is something that is also a factor in how they try to interlay and overlap that blackness within itself, and the culture of blackness is a key determinant aspect of criminal behavior. Now, line that up with some of the other statements that were said around the New Orleans situation, like George Will, who said, quote, "The swiftness of New Orleans' descent from chaos into barbarism must compound the nation's nagging anxiety that more irrationality is rampant in the world just now than this nation has the power to subdue," unquote. So basically, he's playing into this whole thing that black people in New Orleans slipped into a form of barbarism. The reality, as we know and have broken down throughout the Hurricane Sam series, was that it's the state that was in the mode of barbarism. It was FEMA that was sidetracking and actually sabotaging relief efforts. It was the police that were attacking people and sabotaging rescue efforts and imposing in various martial law type tactics. It was mercenaries hired by old line families that were shooting down people and making whatever claim that they can pull out of their rectum. It was old line families that were outlining future plans of gentrification and spatial deconcentration, as we know and have outlined how that's intricately linked into a process of genocide. It was the old line families that were rushing immigrant workers into the region well before certain areas had established any kind of safety, health type of environment in the areas that they wanted them to start working in. it was, once again, raggedy Negro mayors like Megan who were helping propagandize this image. It was oil corporations that played a role in carving up the wetlands that helped create this catastrophe. It was people in the Democrat and Republican administration who have outlined through their corporate masters that imperial war is the stage that America is going to stay gripped in because of its fondness and attachment and apparatus of the capitalist market system that helped defund many of the projects for more proper sustainability on building on the levees. In other words, in all aspects that you can look at, the true barbarity in the situation, contrary to the images that George Will and other clowns like to portray, was steeped into white supremacy and the capital model structure outlined within this particular society. That's the real world. When you have helicopters flying over people's head in the Ninth Ward, just waving high, as one sister in one of the series outlined, which is why people were shooting, not to shoot at the helicopters, to try to get their attention to come down and help or send something. But what did Red Cross end up dropping as Mama D out of the Seventh Ward outlined? And the whole time that they were in that crisis situation, two-year-old outdated rock candy. That's barbarism. That's the real world. So when you hear this clown Bennett talk about, what are the advantages versus disadvantages, and for him, he's going to put blackness as a point of the point of advantage if you eliminate all black people in the context of reducing crime. That's a genocidal impulse and savagery. And the mere fact that this person was educational secretary and a former drug czar once again outlines itself how barbaric the state is in general. But next, let's check out here how Bennett tried to defend himself on his little hack show the following day.
Well, something came up yesterday, and my critics and enemies are trying to make hay out of it, trying to discredit me. Let me give you the context and explain what's going on, and then get back to business. We had a caller yesterday, and he posed the idea that if we didn't have abortion, we'd have no Social Security problems. That is, you shouldn't have abortions because it will lead... If you don't have abortions, you'll have better economics. So this led to a discussion where I argued that this is an unknowable proposition. I cited the analysis and discussion in this best-selling book, Freakonomics. It's on the closely related topic of abortion and crime. Well, there is a campaign making hay of my remarks and taking them out of context and totally reversing my obvious meaning. The author of Freakonomics, Steve Levitt, engages the theory that abortion reduces crime, and he also discusses, as I did, the racial implications of abortion and crime. And he does that in an extended debate on Slate.com. I was referencing this debate and pointing out how tricky it is to argue for a pro-life position because of economic benefits. I was pointing out that abortion shouldn't be opposed for economic reasons any more than racism should be supported or opposed for economic reasons. Immoral policies are wrong, and they're wrong because they're wrong, not because of an economic calculus. One could just as easily have said you could abort all children and prevent all crime. Which is certainly true to show the absurdity of the proposition. So let me repeat. These are matters which scholars talk about, which people write books about, which debate in public policy relations among abortion, crime, and race. That's what we were talking about. Sensitive area? Absolutely. As a philosopher, I was showing the limitation of one argument by showing the absurdity of another, or showing the fallacy of a proposition by using what's called an argumentum ad absurdum or an argumentum ad finem. But in sum, let me just restate what I said yesterday. The whole idea of aborting anyone to reduce crime is, as I said on the air yesterday, impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible. That should end it. That should be clear enough to anyone with an open mind. This whole thing is ridiculous, totally without merit. People will keep yelling about it, but you have a comment, Seth?
All right, so see, what this pig is basically trying to do is mix in the other stuff that he said was impossible. First of all, it's not, in a sense, impossible. You have a situation where the genocidal impulse of America has played itself out in ways where large portions of a particular group was nearly exterminated, greatly reduced of its population, that of course being the Native Aboriginal people. So you have that tradition within this particular country. Now, the fact that he feels that it's impossible, in a sense, or says that it's impossible, is irrelevant. When he says that it's immoral, now, one may have a position like him, hypothetically, that it's immoral to abort all people from one group. But that does not mean that that person still does not have a racist connotation and polemic against that group. In other words, one person can say, yes, morally wrong to kill all black people, but still feel that black people are inferior. So one does not knock out the other. So the fact that he said that, you know, it's immoral, it's wrong, it's impossible, and all of that, does not in any way exclude him from the racist comment that he said right from the start. See, he's just trying to play a little trick game, you know, trying to bend your mind into a false argument and statement and stand that he's now trying to stand on. He's trying to focus in on certain words and get you off the core part of his juxtaposition of the advantage versus disadvantage towards the caller. So this is just basically a person trying to cover his hooves, which is what you expect. The other aspect is that these dogs will always do another trick, and that is, and that fits within the corporate media spectrum, and that is to focus in on street crime. Now, first of all, you have a situation where more people die, almost twice as many people die from corporate crime in America than they do from street crime. Generally, it's somewhere between, you know, 20 and 25,000 people who are killed through street crime, but close to double and often more than double that die from corporate crime and neglect, factories blowing up, all these other type of things. And this is not even to get into the aspect of how these corporations are often involved in murderous adventures that are not even really considered criminal within the context of the market system. So if one were to, let's say, go to CokeKills.org, you could see Coca-Cola and their involvement in all types of hideous, barbaric, satanic type stuff, where they align themselves with knocking off basically unionized workers, and have been caught red-handed in this particular policy of adventure. Now, one could also look at a Merck. Here you have a Merck that have you know, puts out various prescription medicine, and their Vioxx medicine made 88 to 139,000 people extremely sick. You know, heart attacks, strokes. Now, within their own memos, they wrote how to play quote-unquote dodgeball concerning the problem with Vioxx. Now, some of the other stuff that they had been involved in, some of the other medicine and so on and so forth, had produced a situation where out of the 35 to 55,000 people who had gotten some kind of ailment from taking their particular medicine, 40% of them died. Now, this was in the midst of them withholding the evidence. And as they said themselves, playing quote-unquote dodgeball. This is criminal. This is a crime against humanity. Now, the fact that the vast majority of these guys are white guys, they're doing this criminal behavior with suits on, up in high rises and stuff like that, is often not seen within that particular context, but it's still criminal behavior. These are the savages that truly play their way out into the world. Now you have Riggs Bank. Riggs Bank is, of course, connected with the military dictator, the Chilean former dictator, Pinochet. Laundering money and all of this type of stuff. This is how many of these despots, that by the way, especially throughout South America, are put into or help maintain their positions of power or gathered a lot of their barbaric, inhumane, savage training to the School of the Americas. Hugo Banzer Suarez, Manuel Noriega, you know, many listeners who have checked out my commentary on slave, the School of the Americas is a school straight out of hell, knows how I go into that whole connection of the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia, creating some of Latin America's greatest military henchmen and murderers whose rise to prominence or protection of dictators is in alignment with making sure that the region that the U.S. corporations exploit throughout there is maintained in a low-wage, high-repressive type of mandate. In other words, you can go over there and pimp the population for pennies per hour and have them work at slave-type wages and rest assured that there's no need to worry about the population trying to rise up too much because you have your particular dictators, School of the Assassin, military trainees there, and so on and so forth. Now, once again, these are, in a true sense, crimes against humanity. Barbarity at its rawest. But within the context of where Bennett and other hooligans come from, these issues aren't even on the table. Because, of course, analyzing their market capital system is not on the table. So you have a situation where we've just gone through, in the recent years, two coups in Haiti. Once again, the first coup, how did that get started? Well, basically, Aristide was running for office. The various powers that be in America did not like it. You know, Mickey Mouse, Levi Strauss, Nestle's Chocolate, they're all over there. And Aristide's program was to raise the minimum wage, put in a form of social security, have child labor laws. Of course, the U.S. corporate bandits didn't want any of that. So they ran their own candidate. They got them some little, you know, puppet that was running basically through their particular mandate and ideology, financed by them. The problem was that the majority of the population decided not to go for it. So Aristide ends up getting 67% of the vote. Their candidate only got 13%. Now, were they humane about it? Did they just say, okay, well, our candidate lost. Let's just leave it at that. We'll try again in the years to come. No. Then they switched into the next model, the Jackals model, where the CIA then gets involved and forms a terrorist group called FRAP, led by Emmanuel Constance, Toto Constance. FRAP engages in killing thousands of people, running Aristide out for the first time of the country, and then putting in this authoritarian regime that is in alignment with the U.S. Empire's interests. This is barbarity. This is hoonigalism. This is the true nature of the beast exposing itself. Yet, within the context of where the Bennetts of the world focus in on, that's not something that is connected with crime in any sense of the way. That's just basically sound, secure, protecting one's investment. Let's just say that. So, basically, a similar scenario goes on this time, in more recent times after Aristide comes back, and they perform their second coup. And now them, in alignment with their stepchild, the UN, is basically pounding the population into smithereens. And Emmanuel Constance, the known criminal, internationally, where is he residing? Nice and safe in New York. Because if you're the right type of criminal, Sam has no problem with you whatsoever. So, once again, in the same way that Bennett tried to shape-shift the argument, is the same way that they try to shape-shift the issues of criminality and barbarity in this society, which runs deep into their veins. Now here, let's look at how cats who, you know, coddle with these guys, Negroes that coddle with these barbarians and try to play this, well, I'm a liberal and you're conservative, so we don't really think of each other as enemies, which they don't. But look, let's look at where this leads. As Juan Williams, you know, this Negro type, gets caught in the crosshairs on Fox News with a bunch of right-wing hacks and others. Williams, you know, as long, like I said, has cozied up to Bennett in the past. And here he gets a little chastisement and debate as he tries to speak within the limitations of, you know, Negro liberal speak. But check it out.
If you wanted to say, oh gosh, you know, maybe we should have abortions for every woman who has a history in her family of mental illness, or anybody who has a disabled child, or let's get rid of all the Christians. I certainly have been involved with the war. How about the Jews? You know what? We have trouble with older people in this country. Clearly, they, you know, caused a great burden on our social security system. Maybe we should do away with some of these older people. You know, but it really speaks to a deeply racist mindset. To imagine America somehow as better off if we didn't have those black people around and all those racial issues and all these, you know, so many of these blacks end up in jail as if it's they're criminals because they're black.
Juan, he didn't say that.
He certainly said it to me. That's what I heard, Britt.
Excuse me, what he said was not that we should do that, but that it would, he said it would be morally reprehensible, impossible thing to do.
Right.
He condemned that as an action.
Britt, if I'm sitting here on a national talk show and I said, you know, maybe if we killed off these white people, we wouldn't have so many mass murderers in America. You'd say, Juan, are you out of your mind?
Yeah, but if you went on to say, but we would never do that.
No,
because
the idea that someone who on the right, someone who is a credible conservative, a former Secretary of Education, former drug czar, I've attended events with Bill Bennett that he's done in this town to help young black women resist the temptations of early motherhood and all. But to have someone with that credibility on the right speak in that way, I think it suggests a mindset, and it's indicative among many black conservatives of why you can't get black people to trust the Republican Party as a whole. So it really speaks to a larger mindset about racism in America.
Bill Bennett is obviously. and he's not racially bigoted. We know that perfectly well. When I worked for the Secretary of Education, spent an awful lot of time trying to advance policies that we thought would help precisely poorer kids in inner city schools and the like. So it's unfair. It's just wrong to say that these things. Should you do thought experiments, reductio ad absurdum, on talk radio? Probably not. But it's really unfair to say that somehow these things are bigoted.
Let me just ask you a question here. I mean, I think the point is, or the concern is, that here's a caller calling up about if you didn't have any abortion, there'd be more workers. That certainly is true. And his example, to try to show that that's example, to show the absurdity of that, is to immediately link black babies and crime. Don't you find that offensive?
I think he wishes he hadn't done that, but he had in his mind this very popular work of economics, which was based on an article by economists that made an argument that abortion has a huge crime because the kids, the babies who were being aborted, were precisely from the socioeconomic class most likely to commit crime. And black Americans have a higher abortion rate than white Americans and are predominantly poorer and are poorer, obviously, than the average white American. So I think Bill had in his mind this social science argument, and he was rejecting it. The point is, he was rejecting it. He said this is the wrong way to think about moral issues. So I'm sure he wishes he hadn't raised this in what looked like a gratuitous manner. But this is a huge but the assault on him is an attempt to intimidate him. And to intimidate conservatives.
You know,
I really think that's true.
Intimidate conservatives. So now the conservatives are the victims in this. This shows you how sick these guys are and how they're just little spin masters. It's not that they're sharp or really intelligent or anything. It's just that they have this echo chamber. They have, you know, tens of thousands of ditto heads from Rush Limbaugh to O'Reilly saying either the exact same thing or a variation of the same type of rhetoric, and on and on and on. And that mixed with a gumpified population that already has issues of race and racism contaminating their soul daily, well, you have a problem. And in America, there's a problem. So you have a situation where, once again, the first thing they want to do is establish Bennett as not a racist, and that is unfair. It's wrong to even suggest it. Why is it wrong to suggest it? Look, once again, let me make it real clear in another form of way. Bennett's basic position was reduction of crime equals race equals black. That's it in a nutshell. That's how he posed it. Now, regardless of all the other little things he tried to hang on, impossible, immoral, wrong, and all of that, at the end of the day, he put forth a position of reduction of crime equals race, which equals black people. That's it. Now, without all of the glimmering lights, that's really not that much different. Actually, that's not any different than how David Duke would pose something. That's the real world. So, all of this type of stuff about, you know, well, he was referencing a book to like Freakonomics and all of that type of stuff. Well, look, there's always people who are referencing and books that are coming out bashing black people. There's no hiding behind that. Whether it's true of what these guys wrote in this, you know, in other words, whether these guys in this Freakonomics book actually scribbled this type of stuff down, at this point, I don't even worry about it. Because we know how the game is played in general, from the bell curve books and on and on and on. So, him trying to hide under one book or another, it just doesn't fly. He said what he said. But the way of the corporate media, the way they try to play it out, is to attack a person like Williams who tries to question the moral authority of that particular statement. But part of Williams' own moral authority is hampered by the fact that he's aligned himself with this low-life Bennett. This is someone who, when he was playing the Drug Czar game back in the day, called for public executions. Now, during the heyday of all of this Reaganomics, war on drugs, and all of that type of stuff, it was this whole capital market system. It was the CIA. It was banking institutions from Bank of America on down the line that were neck deep in cocaine trafficking in one form or another. With the bank institutions, many of them were caught red-handed laundering drug money from particular clients and or despotic presidents that they knew were involved in cocaine trafficking. You had the CIA and the Contra affair that we've gone over extensively and stuff. And that as various books like The Big White Lie by Michael Levine, when he outlines actually catching agents, when he was in the DEA, catching agents' involvement in cocaine. You have the one DEA agent who saw drug trafficking going out of the Elizondo Air Base. He wrote about this in his book, Powder Burn. And this Elizondo Air Base was connected with Oliver North and all of them. This is not even a debate anymore. It never really was. But what I'm saying is that this was during that whole time when Reagan and company were backing the Contras to undermine the Sandinistas and to overthrow the Sandinistas. They couldn't just beat them straight head on. So the Contras started a tactic of attacking the population in general to try to wear it down overall. And one of the key components of them financing this illegal and immoral operation was through the trafficking of drugs. Now, the Nicaraguan people later took the United States government, SAM, to court, the world court. And SAM was found guilty in international court for these crimes against humanity and was told to pay the Nicaraguan people $19 billion in reparations. Now, of course, SAM didn't, but SAM's an outlaw, so of course, you know, a capitalist outlaw. So, of course, you know, he just slapped that to a side. But Bennett was in the mix of all this. So he was just as deeply and is just as deeply as immoral as all of the Contra henchmen and Contra drug dealers and all of that other type of stuff that he's trying to elevate himself as a czar to fight as a czar of fighting against. Now, when these raggedy liberals play the game, like Juan Williams, that these guys have some kind of integrity, it just shows their culpability in this whole process. And part of the reason why they do it is because they want to overall maintain legitimacy within the market order. They do not want people breaking out of the box. So this is the box that they, of course, find themselves in. Now, continuing on where we left off on this discussion with Britt Humes and Juan Williams and the Fox crew, let's continue.
I think this is the wrong way to think about moral issues. So I'm sure he wishes he hadn't raised this in what looks like a gratuitous manner. But this is a huge. But the assault on him is an attempt to intimidate him, and to intimidate conservatives. I don't really think that's true.
You're saying he just merely raised it to show how ridiculous it was. But then he came back after he said it was morally reprehensible. He said, "But if you're just talking about crime, that would do the trick."
Well,
he came back and made another comment.
No. Then he went on to say that. But here's the point about this. It's very important. There is a consensus in America, reached with great difficulty and after a long struggle over many years, that racial discrimination, and especially because of the history of this country, discrimination against African Americans, is a moral wrong. The country agrees with that.
which is why the charge of racist carries so much potential power against somebody. It is a potentially lethal weapon when wielded. And it is, in my view, a very reprehensible thing to do, to come along and take a man like Bill Bennett, whose record on this, Juan, even you have noted.
Exactly.
And suggest that because he does what is clearly was a thought experiment, that he is racist. This is a cheap exploitation of the political circumstance in America, which regards racism as utterly taboo and rightly so.
But he didn't just simply state it as a theory, Britt. I mean, this, when you have his standing in America, when you have a talk show, when you're speaking to an audience and make that suggestion out of the blue as a non sequitur to a question about Social Security, it strikes me as giving power to a deeply offensive idea. And one, the viewpoint, I've given our history in America with regard to race, has extraordinary power. So he has to take some responsibility for it. I pointed out,
Bill Crystal just pointed out,
he has a history of doing good things.
Juan,
but his words have power. Words have meaning.
Then if his words have power, then the words that he spoke about what a reprehensible thing this would do ought to have power too, and should not be shut out of this discussion as if he had never said them. What the critics of him are doing is they're taking the hypothetical that he set up and condemned and denounced as if he had never condemned it. He did condemn it, and those words should have power.
I think what you're misunderstanding is it's the idea that he gave voice to this notion. It's as if you were in a Nazi regime. It's like, a lot of these Jewish people have businesses and they dominate the academy, and therefore, wouldn't it be better? That's not a good idea, Britt. Not a good idea to give voice to. You can say, it's my theory, and it should be defensible as theory, but it has real power in a political system.
It has power, but it doesn't have the kind of power you think it does. It has power when to be
as a black person, let me tell you, if you start talking about going after black people, it has power and impact on my life, Britt.
His saying it's reprehensible then should have power on your life, too.
Should he apologize?
Why?
I just asked the question.
I think he wishes he hadn't said it, because I think there's this much truth in what Juan is saying, that to do thought experiments in public about killing black babies is probably a bad idea. Even if you immediately say this is a reductio ad absurdum, this shows how horrible an idea this was, which is exactly what Bill was saying. So I totally want to defend Bill, and I frankly, no one would have noticed this if, the left-wing bloggers hadn't picked it up and made it a big issue. But it is probably a mistake to do, quote, thought experiments about something so highly charged as race and something combining it with crime and abortion.
Mara, I mean, that's the thing we do in this town. Should he apologize or not?
I do not think that Bill Bennett was suggesting that all black babies be aborted. What he was doing, he was saying, and he said it twice, that if that happened, the crime rate would go down. And that, I think, is what offended people.
You get the final word.
Well, I just, it's not about Bill Bennett. I'm not trying to make it personal. It's just that it's so deeply offensive what he said.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there, Pat.
So once again, you can see how when you have hacks on who basically are determined to protect their own, themselves, and try to abstain Bennett and those of that life from any form of culpability to being racist, then you just have a game where things are just shuffled along. When you hear Britt Humes talk about how in America, the consciousness has come to a point where people view racism and racial discrimination as a moral wrong. I mean, this is just some cheap, sick, whack rhetoric. We just got over the 2000 election, whereas Greg Polis broke out initially that the majority of the voters who were knocked off from being eligible to vote during the 2000 presidential election were black. And the way it was done by Jeb Bush and Catherine Harris was to use a computer software that linked quote-unquote, a form of criminality from making you ineligible to vote. So here they take something from the legacy of the past. The whole issue of if you have a felony record, you can't vote. Now, this was in part done to disenfranchise black people who were being artificially criminalized after Reconstruction and all of that, to one, toss black people into a subservient position in prison, the Angola prisons and all of that, and also to neutralize any form of voting strength by giving them records and then putting on the charts of their various states that if you have a felony record, you're ineligible to vote, even though you've served your time. So this is a legacy of racism within itself. But then these Jeb Bush, Catherine Harris, and the Republican Party decide to take it a step further by knocking off 90,000 plus voters. Less than 5% of them were actual felons. So they put together a software program that did a massive collateral damage on the people in Florida. And if your name was anywhere similar to a name of someone who had a felony record, not even in the state, you'd be knocked off. You could be a completely different age, different height, everything. It didn't matter. This was intentional. This was racist at the core. They were targeting a portion of the population that they wanted to knock off because of its recent historical voting strategies within the context of, you know, bourgeois elections and stuff. So here you have this process go on. Raw, intense, and racist at the core. And in all aspects, what we saw were, after Polish broke it, Al Gore had not conceded. Al Gore had not yet conceded the election. But Al Gore himself was more concerned about the integrity of the system than he was for the protection of the rights of black people to vote. So he sabotaged the efforts of people to call into play what had happened. This is before he even conceded. And then he didn't even allow an investigation. He was still vice president. And for those people who believe in the Democratic Party and vice presidency and all of that, he had, quote unquote, a moral obligation to protect the Constitution. But when it came to black people, we ain't protecting it for them. Means nothing. You're still three-fifths. That's the real world. And that's how it played itself out. That within itself shows you the racist mindset, construct, and acceptance of racism within this wretched society still today. Now, you also have a situation where we've seen black kids in New York be tested on with non-FDA-approved drugs. Non-FDA approved, like Glaxo, Welcome, and others. Some of these were DNA terminating drugs. A load of these kids weren't even sick at all. They were using them as human guinea pigs. A good number of the kids died. They were targeting specific kids, expendable kids, black kids in foster homes. That's a genocidal impulse and it's racist to the core. And it didn't get any legs whatsoever in the corporate media. Now, we've also seen how black people who have no criminal background record compared to white people who have a criminal background record, the same educational and skill and work history, the white person is called back many times over more. Now, when it's the same, in other words, no criminal background, same education, same work history, so on and so forth, whites are called back up to 50% more than their black counterpart. This shocked many of the people who were doing some of this testing on the issue. But once again, it basically within this society got a ho-hum. That's part of the racist acceptance within this society and the racist nature that exists within it. Now here, to show you how you have, of course, those who align themselves with this order. I'm talking about Negroes. And here's one of them. Just a little typical low-life Negro Christian minister who's running to Bennett's defense. And he's using the same type of misinformation that was spread through the corporate media, George Will and others, to kind of justify the attack on black.
First, I want to say I know Bill Bennett. He's not a racist. He's a good man. As a matter of fact, we use his book, The Book of Virtues, with Audubon, after school character building program. This attempt is an attempt by the liberals to prevent white conservative Republicans from speaking the truth about black Americans.
Wait a second.
Whether it's on race or moral issue, this is an attempt to shut down white Republican conservatives.
Reverend, the White House today condemned the remarks. Again, I'm looking to have a broader conversation, not to make it about Bill Bennett. What is the root cause of crime? I want to answer my question. Is the root cause of crime race or is it poverty?
The root cause of crime is the lack of moral character. You know, we saw a good example of that in the New Orleans situation. In the inner cities, I've done a lot of work in the inner cities, and I have to tell you that crime is and out of wedlock births, black folks having babies not being married, and stuff like that is out of control. And it's not because they lack material things, but because not all,
right.
But most of them lack moral character. Look right. What they did to the Dome. In 3 days, they turned the Dome into a ghetto.
All right, this shows you how sick these types are, and how, regardless of your color, if you align yourself with the order, you become a reflection of that sickness. For this dog, this lowlife, to say that it was the black internally displaced persons of New Orleans who turned the Dome into a ghetto is playing into all of that rhetoric about all this massive looting, shooting, killing, raping going on. Now, as we've gone over during the Hurricane Sam series, in the Dome and in the other facility, they just had like two people who they confirmed were killed. That was in both facilities. And there was a suicide, there was other things, you know, so on and so forth. But it wasn't all this killing. They didn't find all the rape. New Orleans papers and others have now come out saying all of this stuff was exaggerated. But, see, this coon, like others, are going to keep on repeating it. Just keep repeating the lie. In the same way that the corporate media allows, and Fox News allows Boy George and them to repeat various lies, like Saddam Hussein was somehow connected to the 9/11 attacks, or Saddam Hussein is connected to Al-Qaeda, and all on and on. Even though these things have been vastly discredited within the American population, you still have large percentages of the population that believe it. So they just keep repeating the lies because they know that they're just trying to stick on people a certain image. And once that image is stuck on, that dehumanizing image, then the next actions can take forth, which is what they basically have plans for. That's also what makes what the lowlife Bennett say part of a genocidal impulse apparatus, because when you just link a certain group of people with quote-unquote criminality, And, of course, criminality is linked with the social, you know, degradation and lack of morals within the society and the problems of society, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then, quote unquote, to solve the criminality problems is to basically eliminate the inferior breed. That all that stuff goes within context. And that is part of the context that Bennett was coming from, whether he outwardly spoke it or not. So these are just sick people who justify the unjustifiable. And this Negro also, once again, is playing the game that the corporate media allow, that liberals are trying to stop white conservatives from speaking the truth about black people and all of that. What truth? What moral foundation do these so-called white conservatives have to speak of about anyone, about any society? They lie, rape, and pillage to justify their onslaught in imperial wars. And they've lied, raped, and pillaged to justify the onslaught within this population, past and currently. Now, last on this, here's how CNN does this little skit on the Bennett affair. Check it out.
Controversial comment from former Education Secretary William Bennett. Congressional Democrats are demanding Bennett apologize for what one calls outrageous racism, but Bennett is defending his remarks. Miles O'Brien has that story.
Well, I'm not racist, and I'll put my record up against theirs.
Former Education Secretary William Bennett on the defensive after some remarks many are calling offensive. It happened as he responded to a caller on his syndicated radio show Wednesday.
That if you wanted to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do, but your crime rate would go down.
Bennett is a veteran soldier in the culture wars. He served as drug czar in the first Bush administration, pushed the war on drugs, then later wrote the Book of Virtues, a handbook of conservative morality. Democrats wasted no time firing back at his latest provocative comment.
What could possibly have possessed Secretary Bennett to say those words, especially at this time? What could he possibly have been thinking? This is what is so alarming about his words.
House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi called on President Bush to condemn the comments. And the head of the NAACP said in a statement, while the entire nation is trying to help survivors, black and white, to recover from the damage caused by Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, it is unconscionable for Bennett to make such ignorant and insensitive comments. But true to form, Bennett is standing by his words. He says they were taken out of context.
If somebody thought I was advocating that, they ought to be angry. I'd be angry. I was putting forward a hypothetical proposition, put that forward, examined it, and then said about it that it's morally reprehensible to recommend abortion of an entire group of people in order to lower your crime rate is morally reprehensible. But this is what happens when you argue that the ends can justify the means.
And to his critics, Bennett says he is not the one who owes an apology.
All right, once again, you can see how the corporate media plays into this because they just play into, Bennett, are you going to back down from your word? No, I'm not. Actually, they should apologize. Then they report, well, William Bennett is still standing by his word. In other words, there's no real breakdown from them. They abstain from any of all of that, and they just regurgitate basically out the particular sides that are within that spectrum of the false debate. So the fact that Bennett gives this statement about doing a hypothetical as opposed to him doing a real juxtaposition of the advantage versus disadvantage of abortion. The disadvantage, like I said in the beginning, was the caller saying that the loss of people means less people in the workforce because they're not alive,
which hurts the Social Security and the stability of it. Bennett posed an advantage. Well, one can argue an advantage in abortion is the lowering the crime rate if it's done in black, i.e., if you abort all black babies. That was his just position. It was directly aimed within and at black people. So, within that particular context, it has its roots in a racist type of mindset and ideology because of who he linked criminality with. Black people. So, all this smoke and mirrors games and this abstaining, of course, from any form of real journalism by the corporate media basically helps expose how they play in to this whole process. Bennett, in essence, was saying reduction of crime equals race equals black people. The race is black people. If you want to reduce crime, you can abort all black babies. It's just that simple. That's the real world. Now, all this taken out of context and all of that type of stuff is just the reframing apparatus. But you don't see any of these challenges happen by CNN, and nor do you expect. In essence, the reason why I call this whole piece, though, racism a question of power, is because it does come down to power. When you have a situation where Bennett can make these types of statements without any real fear of reprisal, that's because him and others of them are coming from a position of power. One, there's a lack of infrastructure being able to frame and reframe the real issues by and large within the population. I'm not talking about the corporate media because, of course, they're on the side and I don't expect them to. They're part of the enemy apparatus. I'm talking about from our aspect of what we need to expand. Also, there's a lack of power in from us on deciding what needs to be done about this type of stuff. In other words, let me break it down on the real. In essence, what gives Bennett and all of these types that are involved in all of these genocidal types of apparatus, from these mercenaries to these raggedy mayors and all of that, what gives them the right to live? Because in essence, they are implying and practicing out in various forms all right not to exist. When you see Pat Robinson and them play games under this whole relief form, you know, in places like Africa, and actually use it for mining diamonds, further exploitation of the people, and a continuation of a genocidal policy of profit over people, what gives Pat Robinson a right to live? What gives Bennett a right to live? What gives like someone like Jerry Brown a right to live, who practice out these various forms of attacking policies on black people, the mayor of Oakland? What gives these police? You know, these are some of the questions we need to start asking. If we don't have a right to live as human beings, what gives them the right to live? When we start asking these types of questions, making decisions and acting out on some of those decisions, then we'll be on a true journey, or a truer journey, or starting a various forms of journey of empowerment. That's the real world. Hold on a sec. Thank you.
lawyers everywhere. I was right. Everything I knew was wrong.
Shoot into this Beyond the Shadow segment and in essence go beyond the veil. You know, Sam's conflict, this imperial conflict and invasion into Iraq, has created a hornet's nest, and amongst many of the issues that are going on that are spiraling out of control, we're going to focus in tonight on the context of hornet stinging women in Iraq. Yanar Mohammed expresses fear about the draft constitution in Iraq. So let's check out what her concerns are in this Beyond the Shadow segment and go beyond the religious veil. Check her out.
We are looking at it right now, and all our fears there have been realized. It is decided that Islam will be the main source of legislation. In other words, women have turned into second-rate citizens. And they have agreed on turning Iraq into a federal life where the North here will be a nationalist, a Kurdish nationalist part of Iraq, where everybody from other nationalism will be of citizens. And in the South, they also want to create a Shiite federalized where all people of other religions will be less citizens. So they had agreed into dividing Iraq upon ethnic and religious lines, and they have decided to make women second-rate citizens. The only thing that they have not agreed upon is how to share the wealth. That is the warlords. I think they have qualified for the name the warlords. Each of them wants a bigger share of the oil in their pockets, so as to rule that part of Iraq strongly against the others. The federal life they have agreed upon, but we are unable to impose it on some parts of the committee of writing the constitution, and they have asked for 3 days delay. Everybody knows that now. They have set us now a blueprint that has started day one from a civil war inside Iraq upon ethnic and upon religious lines, and women have been turned second rate. And the day that we were fearing is here now. We have to face it. And it seems that they have agreed upon everything that is inhumane. The only thing they have not agreed upon is that every single warlord wants a bigger share of the oil. That is the only disagreement that they have in the parliament now.
Okay, so once again, the U.S. involvement has helped rise up a form of nationalistic Islamicism in a particular region and stuff. Now, the reason why, in part, that I'm doing this is that, see, people often use these various images to portray issues and topics that really are immaterial. If someone decides they want to bend their knees to Allah and they're all into that type of stuff, you know, the invisible man, Allah, go on and on and on, well, that's their business. But often what happens is that you have this type of situation where people were trying to portray from various forms of Christianity, the Islams, the Christians, the Hebrons, that their particular religion equals some kind of form of peace and harmony, a form of modesty and stuff. Now, often what they'll use for these various forms of imagery of modesty and stuff like that is clothing. This is what I mean. You have a situation where you see a lot of people, you know, wearing hijabs and all of that type of stuff. And a lot of girls will tell you, you know, they're wearing them even in the States, that it's a form of modesty and on and on and on. Now, never mind does it really say that you're supposed to wear it in the Quran or whatever. But this is the way the game is played. So now we're talking about an image. Image is supposed to reflect something of substance. But many of those same people, when you turn around and ask them, well, do you believe in the market system? Overwhelmingly, especially down around by the Berkeley campus, they believe in the market system. Well, if you believe in the market system, you believe in the McDonaldization of the planet. You believe in imperialism, because they go hand in hand. The market capitalist system is a part of the imperialist structure. And nothing is more obscene and vulgar than that. It doesn't matter how you're cloaked. But often, charlatans are always trying to get you cooked up into this whole imagery thing. It's the same game that's always been played. Look, Bush and company, they are dressed up conservatively, modestly, you know, with all their little suits and, you know, all dark suits and modest ties and stuff like that. But they're vicious maniacs running around plundering the world in the most obscene type of way. Look at someone like David Duke. In David Duke's early days, back in the 70s, he wore outlandish clothes, you know, the Klan robes and so on and so forth. His program and solution for the problem in America was to burn up all black people. But now he got with it. Now he doesn't wear the outlandish clothes anymore. He dresses real modest, very conservatively. What is David Duke's program? To burn up all black people. In other words, his program hasn't changed. Just his wardrobe. It's all imagery. Now, within context of what's going on in Iraq, Yanar and all of them, the women over there, they can't play the game. You know, many of them know, who are at least are not connected with top officials and all of that type of stuff and trying to buy into the government, they know that that's their ass. That, as she said, they're going to be second-rate citizens. Now, what point, or what good is being a quote-unquote second or third-rate or subhumanized citizen if, oh, quote-unquote, you're dressed in the quote-unquote appropriate way? You're dressed in a humble way. This is all a facade. It's all imagery and stuff. So, for people to talk about what their quote-unquote religion represents and how it represents a form of harmony and peace, get out of here with all that embryonic clock trap stuff. It's all a hierarchical system, and they all play into it. That's the real world. All of these cats are scrammering for more economic power, and as it's played out right now, they foresee their empowerment based in a situation where women's rights need not be included. Now, you have many diligent union workers in Iraq whose program is not under any particular religion, but under more of a workers' co-op, so on and so forth. Now, they are pushing forth a mandate that is more in alignment with the rights of women and so on and so forth. But it's not coming from any of these religious sectors or anything like that. So once again, the imagery stuff of what religions are supposed to represent and all of that, on a personal level, what you do, how many times you bend your knees, irrelevant. But when it comes to the larger context, let's put it in proper context. Now, also you have a situation where, let's hear her outline woman's input in this particular process, and how their input is defined and how they know how they best align.
The women that they have in the committee for writing the constitution are there just for decoration. Most of them, 48% of them, have voted yes for an Islamic constitution. They do not care about women's interests. They are following the political parties that they are from, which are mostly Islamic political parties. And the secular people in the government, and those are very minimum, have chosen to follow the majority and not to push for a human rights agenda and not to ask for it at all. I have in front of me the chapter 1 from the Constitution that is that determines very clearly that no article in the law can go against the rulings of Islam. This is the priority. The second point is that no article in the law can go against the rules of democracy. In other words, if Islam says one man is equal to four women, that will be the basis, because following the rules of Islam is the priority. The second point, which says democracy and every citizen is equal to the other, this will be thrown in the garbage can because it comes as a second priority. This is the draft that they have prepared for us. And this is the new Iraq that will be ruled, where the beginning of the civil war has just been legislated, and they call it a constitution.
Once again, you have a situation where, you know, the core of these guys, these are the ones that are in alignment with Sam. And they put forth this little constitution with this Islamic law, and Sam doesn't have a problem with it because, in essence, this Islamic law is not really challenging their overall goals. Which is still, of course, for the imperial domination. So, however one wants to veil themselves in their particular invisible man belief is really irrelevant at the end of the day, if, in essence, is not for the true human rights of all people to have a clean cup of water and a clean piece of bread. Hold on a sec. this up. I'm going to a few notes from Adraptomania right quick. You know, the clown I blew up in the beginning was James Dobson. And while I clowned him in the beginning, I'm going to play a little something that he was saying on his little show. Basically, it's his call to God concerning this abortion issue and Myers, who has been selected by Boy George to be the new Supreme Court Justice. And let's put some of this, well, more veil, religious veil. Let's pull it off. So let's check out what Dobson had to say.
What I have said to the Lord, and Sherry and I prayed about this early this morning. I said, Lord, you know that I've had a policy all my adult life, when it came to a point of decision, to pray this prayer. Lord, you know I don't have the wisdom to make this decision. You know that what I feel now and what I think is right may be dead wrong. You know that I could get out of your will and do something to hurt the cause of Christ. And I would rather sacrifice my life than do that. And I think I know what you want me to say in regard to this nominee. I think I have your mind, but I'm not sure. You can never be sure. You don't know till that justice is on the court and begins making decisions and handing down rulings. You don't know what power will do to that individual when they grant it. Lord Acton said, power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And so, you know, we don't know not only where an individual is today, but where they will be 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 15 years from now. So it is a momentous decision, and apparently God has put me in a role of at least expressing my view, and that does influence people, or some people, and I just want to make sure that I do it right. So I've been saying, Lord, if I'm wrong here, or even if I'm right, get the message through to me. I am listening to you. I will do anything you want. If this is not the person you want on that Supreme Court, all you have to do is tell me so, and do it through any means you want to, through the scriptures, through friends, through my pastor, through things that people write or say or call to this ministry. Let me know exactly what you want me to do, and I will follow that. In the meantime, I'm doing what I think is right, and I just ask you to second-guess me, because I don't have the intelligence or the wisdom to know what is right in every situation, and certainly not this one. So I'm blatantly asking for the prayers of our friends out there at this point particularly.
Well, you said so much in these past few minutes, and I have not seen you so weighted down by the responsibility God has given you to speak out, to be a shepherd to some degree to many within the Christian community, many who tune in and want to know what you think.
If America wasn't in such a backward state, some of that would be, well, some of it is funny anyway, but on another level, this shows you how bad on a certain level things are. Here you have this guy who, in essence, at least out on the surface, is playing this game of, I'm listening to you, God, anything you have to say. Let me know, I will follow. I don't have the intelligence, the wisdom myself, so on and so forth. Now, of course, he's putting it in the context of what? That abortion is wrong. That there needs to be an end of abortion. And that the decisions that they make are of vital importance and can only be delivered by God themselves, by God himself. So what he's actually doing is mixing religion and politics. And of course, Boy George and Company played right along by contacting him and all of that type of stuff and put him right in the middle. So within that context, let's sum up what we've gone over on this show. We have what we see is the so-called cloak of justice, cloak of honesty in religion, and more, which gives them the moral high ground, so on and so forth. That's what Bennett does. And that's how he tries to abstain himself away from being labeled a racist, even though at core what he said was racist and had a genocidal type of impulse and stuff. At the same time, we see in the Beyond the Shadow segment, these Islamic constitutional writers, they also cloak themselves in the Islamic version of all these things, which is basically a cousin of the Christians. It's all part of the Abrahamic tradition. They cloak themselves in a moral high ground, also in their various ways and techniques. Now, at the same time that they do this, like Bennett, they're full of feces because they are in alignment with the U.S. Empire. These guys are collaborators with the Empire, which is as immoral as you can get. And then you tie it together also with how Dobson does it from his perspective, their Christian cousin, who mixes in all of this Christian folklore to try to gain and outline the foundation of legitimacy. Yet, they do it within the context of all of them. All of them are in support of the imperial apparatus. Now, they'll point to, in Bennett's case, women having kids out of wedlock, or in some of these Islamic cats game that they're playing already, where they're blowing up liquor stores and already attacking women who aren't quote-unquote properly veiled and so on, and Dobson playing his game and stuff like that. You know, with his focus on the family. Now, it's not a focus in on the Bush family regime and its legacy of collaboration like Prescott Bush with the Nazis as a banker, or Bush Sr. with his collaboration with imperial interests throughout the world and region, from the Saudis to South America, his connection with the CIA as the lead at one time, Bush Sr. that is, and the sadistic practices that he played out through that, or Boy George and his imperialist and moral war currently. He's not focusing in on that family. There's no call to abort that type of family, or Karl Rove's family, or the people who gave birth to these types of true heathens, the ones that are running the death squad corporation called Coca-Cola, or the ones that are at the helms of this imperial crusade now currently going on in America. They're all part of the same game, but they only want you to look at certain things and certain images as being non-modest, immoral, indecent, whatever. That's all part of their veil of deceit and veil of barbarity. And that's something that needs to be more than torn off. Those who wear that veil need to be, well, I think you know where we're coming from. Hold on a sec. So that's just going to about wrap it up for Slave tonight. It's clear that these various veils and powers that be that use their various forms of genocidal impulse and racism are coming from a question of their own power. Power of games, manipulation, deceit, cloaked within their religions, hocus pocusisms, and what have you. It's still a game of death. And it's still something that needs to be, in the end, shaken down. Until the next time, Slave Revolt out.